The Gary Knoll Show, weekdays at noon Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to explore the latest in healing and how to prevent memory loss and improve cognition for those over the age of 35. My guest in the second half of our program will be Lisa Graves. She is the director of Center for Media and Democracy and publisher of PR Watch and Source Watch and Bankster USA. She's a professor of law, and she was worked in the U.S. Justice Department. She was also chief counsel for nominations for the U.S. Senate Judicial Committee and also for the American Civil Liberties Union. We're going to talk about ALEC. That's the American Legislative Exchange Council. And we'll tell you why PAC money is buying elections. Well, therefore, who are they? Well, they're big pharma and big insurance, and they're big utilities, big banks, and they're getting away with it. We'll bring you the latest on that. Our commentary today will come from Robert Reich, and it will be The Decline of the Public Good. This is a really good one, and I'm going to ask you to call in and share your points of view, how you feel about this. And coming up, 7 Reasons America's Mental Health Industry is a Threat to Our Sanity, from Bruce Levin. We're going to be doing a lot of good specials. Today also, I'm going to give you the latest on the spike in solar flares and how it can affect the Earth later this year or beginning of next year. So as you see, we have a full plate. Now, I was going to do a special original in-depth investigative report the first of the year, but I'm going to hold that till our next program because a lot of people on one of our other sister stations is not able to listen in today, so I want them to be able to benefit from it as well. So we'll post that and play that on our next program. Plus, we'll have the final installment of Homeless Vets, the documentary I've been working on for 2 years. The final 40-minute installment will go up also on that program. So we have a lot that's happening. Let's begin. For all the vegans, make sure you're getting your vitamin B12 and folic acid. The best way of doing it is just a simple sublingual tablet. Or you can make sure that you're getting enough fermented foods to provide it that way. If you don't have enough, you can end up with memory loss. If you have lots of it in your system, vitamin B12 and folic acid, you can help prevent memory loss and improve cognition. This is from the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, research done at Australian National University. They found that the B complex, and specifically those two vitamins, really impact our brain, especially cognitive functioning. And if you're using it for a period of 2 years, it makes an enormous difference. Well, I believe we should be using it on a regular basis. So just make sure you're getting. My suggestion would be 1 milligram of methylated B12, 1 milligram of methylated folic acid daily. All that fast food that you eat comes in wrappers. Well, here's the latest from Environmental News Science. Quote, chemicals used to keep grease from leaking through fast food wrappers and microwave popcorn bags are migrating into the food being ingested by people and showing up as contaminants in our blood. This is according to the University of Toronto. Chemicals used to keep grease from leaking through there and are not good for us. Now, there's nothing healthy about them. The contaminants are very, very stable synthetic chemicals. They repel oil and grease and water. They're used in surface protection products like carpets and clothing treatment and coating of paper and cardboard packaging. Earlier research at the University of Toronto, environmental scientist, almost 4 years ago, found that the wrappers are showing up, the chemicals from the wrappers are showing up in human food. This is just a further clarification of that. Yeah, it's happening. So don't get the wrappers in any of that because you don't want the chemicals because the chemicals could adversely affect your whole hormonal system. Omega-3 fatty acids enhance the benefits of strength training for older people. This is from the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. What they did is they gave 2 grams of fish oil a day for 3 months, and they found that when that was combined with strength training, they improved muscle tone and more muscle mass, better cut, more strength, longer exercising. All good. One of the things we notice when a person gets older is they lose muscle mass. And they lose it in the face, they lose it in the arms, in the back, their skin starts to hang and sag and bag and get kind of a wrinkly look. That doesn't have to happen. By taking in the right nutrients, you can protect your human growth hormone. You protect your hormone levels in general, men and women, as long as you're taking in lots of phytoestrogen-rich vegetables and fruits or their juices. And then taking in the omega-3 fatty acids, that's just a plus. So omega-3 fatty acids, one more reason we should use it. If you go to the Orient, China or Japan, or South Korea for that matter, you'll find that virtually 90% of the people on a regular basis use fermented foods. In the United States, about the only fermented food we ever use would be yogurt, sometimes sauerkraut. But people on high blood pressure have been told because it's higher in sodium, don't use the sauerkraut. But they're using real fermented foods. And as a result, women there historically have not suffered the same degree of symptoms of hot flashes and night sweats and hormonal changes that women in the West suffer from. It was 5 years ago that we began a one-year study. We had 242 women. To get into the study, you had to be in menopause. The symptoms, I think we had 47 separate symptoms that large numbers of the women suffer from, and hot flashes and night sweats were at the top. Women would say that it could be zero outside, and they could have a sheet on, and the sheet would be soaked. And one woman's husband said that in the middle of the night, she would have to get up and change the sheet not once but twice because it would be soaked. And he, in turn, would be freezing, and she would be boiling. Hard to imagine, but that's actually what happens if your hormones are out of balance. Now, what we were able to do, the good news is that by the end of the study, we were able to rebalance the women's hormones naturally to such a degree that virtually all of the symptoms were gone. And this is the first study ever that was able to do this under strict scientific conditions using only natural techniques, no medicines, no drugs. And we were able to get that accepted by the World Congress on Anti-Aging Medicine and the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine. Dr. Martin Feldman and I went out to Chicago and presented the research paper at that time to about 7,000 scientists. We use it every day. We have sent this information out to so many people. Now a new study published in the Journal of Women's Health, which is a peer-reviewed journal, quote, "Daily doses of soy germ-based nutritional supplement containing S-Equal improve menopausal symptoms in postmenopausal Japanese women, including significantly reducing hot flash frequency when compared to control groups using placebo. A 12-week trial and tested 10 milligrams of the natural S-Equal, E-Q-U-O-L supplement." Well, we didn't use this supplement. What we simply did was this. We gave people Vitax, V-I-T-A-X, plus we had him take genistein. And the genistein is a fragment of the soy. You can buy it in standardized form, about 200 milligrams, along with black cohosh, squall vine, dong quai, the most commonly used herb in the world, and ginseng, Siberian ginseng, the real good Eleutherococcus sinicosus, red root ginseng. And by taking those and juicing four times a day, that's what made the difference. And also helped them regain muscle mass and lose weight, to go through the night without waking up, stop urinary incontinence, and improved their metabolism. They no longer were having an underactive thyroid. All these great things happened. Energy galore. But this fermented soy study shows that's a part of it. And we had the fermented soy. We were suggesting people take once a day a simple soup, shiitake mushrooms and whitecap mushrooms, and thinly slice them, and put them into some water that was not boiling but hot. Stir one teaspoon of a pleasant-tasting miso paste. The best is probably barley miso, but you also have rice miso. And add to that diced garlic, diced onion, some seaweed, and you stir all that together. Now that is quite simply one of the most powerful healing drinks you could ever have. The garlic, two types of mushrooms, the miso, which is fermented, the onions, and it's just terrific for you. I suggest this now at this time of year because it'll diminish the amount of infections most people have. You've heard me mention that one of the reasons I put everyone on a detoxification protocol is to turn off inflammation in their body. Yesterday I filmed a Dr. Nash, who is arguably America's one of the top three immunologists. She's a professor of immunology. She's an MD. She's published papers. She's pro-vaccine, but boy, does she come down against Gardasil. And then I ask her a basic question in this filming that you'll see. I'm doing a new film on vaccines, but I'm putting the large segments of the interview that will not end up in the film up on GaryNallTV.com as of this coming Monday. So you can see things that I see when I'm sitting behind a camera and I'm thinking, wow, this is such good information. But only a couple minutes are going to end up in a film because there are 30 other people are going to be in that film. And you try to keep the films at a reasonable length. And if you want to get them on, you know, public television, it's an hour and a half. You can't have them be 4 hours long. But I might film 100 to 200 hours of good material. Now all that good material will see the light of day. And the basic question is, can anyone in immunology prove that a vaccine actually creates lifetime protective antibodies to that given pathogen? So if you were given a vaccine for measles or chickenpox, that you would then create the amount and type of antibodies necessary to protect you in case you ever came into contact with this. And it would be there for the rest of your life. And she said, absolutely not. And I said, well, isn't that the entire basis of getting a vaccination? That you're supposed to have a small amount of the actual ingredient that goes into your system, and then that is supposed to stimulate the body to create protection. And she said, that's what it's supposed to do, but that's never been put to the test. You've never had one group of people who've not received a vaccine at all, and another group that has received all their vaccines, and then check their antibodies over a period of years to see who gets and doesn't get and what percentage. It's never been done. And also, a lot of people will get some form of antibody response, but then they end up getting the disease, so clearly it wasn't protective. And other people end up getting the disease because of the vaccine. Very interesting conversation. But one of the things I suggested is that vaccines create massive inflammation in the young person's body. and that young person is not able to deal with this, and especially in their bowel. Almost all the children with autism have bowel disturbances, gastrointestinal disturbances. And hence, one of the things that we have found in helping people is you must reestablish a really healthy gut. Probiotics several times a day, chelating out the heavy metals like the mercury, and then healing the bowel tissue with a glutamine and other nutrients and aloe vera that are known to be healing to the intestine. Here's the latest from the peer-reviewed journal Gastroenterology. This is the official journal of the American Gastroenterological Association. This is published in Science Daily. Listen to this. Inflammatory bowel disease emerges as a global disease. The incidence and prevalence of inflammatory bowel disease are increasing with time and in different regions around the world. Quote, insight into the worldwide epidemiology of inflammatory bowel disease is important for identifying of geographic patterns in the time trends. This is the MD and head of this University of Calgary. Now, what this talks about is that everywhere in the world now, you're seeing irritable bowel conditions. Why? Because you have inflammation. Well, first, we have massive vaccine programs being conducted all over the world. And secondly, many of the ingredients in their diet now are pro-inflammatory. They're going from their natural diets into a westernized diet. And the first thing happens when you start with the pizzas, french fries, hot dogs, hamburgers, bagels, the soft drinks, you end up with inflammation. Massive inflammation. Where? In your bowel. And that, in turn, can cause depression of your immune system. It can cause inflammation of the parts of your body. So between the vaccines, which are pro-inflammatory and bad, and our westernized diet, we're now creating a worldwide epidemic of inflammation in the bowel. Look at the ads on television and just see how many of those ads even brag about, oh, you know, I can eat anything, I drink anything, and then, oh, upset stomach, well, here comes this Prilosec or whatever it is to Xantax to stop that gas. Now I can eat everything. We'll go back and deconstruct that. You're getting an upset stomach because of improper food combining, highly acidic food, lots of caffeine, lots of fried food, and that's causing a bad situation. So you destroy the hydrochloric acid in the stomach so a person doesn't respond to it, but it doesn't change the fact that you've just created all these cancer-causing agents in your body. You haven't learned a lesson from it, but you're selling a drug. And that's the whole point of the exercise. Next up on our health, on our environmental segment, I'm going to share this. Oh, by the way, some good news. Dr. Andrew Wakefield has sued yesterday the British Medical Journal for claiming the MMR study was fraudulent. And this just came out this morning in The Guardian. He is going after him. And interestingly enough, in his lawsuit are many statements made on my program when I debated Brian Deer in the one-on-one. And so this will be interesting. Now, what I'm going to do is in 2 weeks, I'm going to do a five-hour special on the case of Dr. Andrew Wakefield on our Monday evening Progressive Commentary Hour. That will be an interesting program now that he is fighting back. And I told him at the time, you should fight back. And he was reluctant to do so. Now he is. That's good. I'll keep you up to date on that, and you won't want to miss that big special. By the way, Monday evening, 3 hours, Chris Hedges. It was about 2.5 to 3 months ago that I wrote a very comprehensive article, all fully referenced, about why we should be concerned about the upcoming spike in solar flares. And we have an aging electrical grid system in the United States. And unlike a tornado, hurricane, earthquake, some form of natural disaster that can break those lines within a reasonable period of time, an hour to a week, sometimes a couple weeks, they'll get out there and they'll fix that line and our electricity is restored. Solar flare, it doesn't break the lines. fries. Literally, if you took a hairdryer and it was on and you dropped it into a bathtub, you'd see sparks and you'd see smoke, and it would burn the entire and mold together the entire apparatus, the entire motor. You couldn't fix it. That's what happens with a solar flare. A huge plume of radiation and magnetic particles bloom out, come to the earth, hit the ground, and every single electrical appliance, they're going to fry. Now, you have two ways of you deal with this. A, you get big surge protectors. That's good. You put them in every major substation and major station, these 100-ton giant stations, and from which our electricity in our given neighborhoods come. That protects it, because then that surge protector absorbs this energy and it doesn't go into the rest of the facility. And you do it at your home as well, or at least when you know that's happening, you turn off all your electricity and you have a surge protector. At least that protects you. Of course, when the electricity goes back on, there's the assumption that the electricity will be fixed, and so you'll get electricity finally to your home. In my case, I put solar in, so my house is 100% solar. Everything in my house works at negative electricity, meaning the meter runs in reverse, 100%. And I wish people would do that. And I can run two refrigerators, a freezer, a complete security system, and radio system, telephone, all that, and no electricity goes backwards. If I turned on air conditioning units, which I don't do, then it would. But otherwise, safe. So that's good. Secondly, you have a backup diesel generator, so that when you get knocked out on the electrical grid, your diesel generator goes on and you get that. Third, propane generator. The propane generator is better than the diesel, because the likelihood is you're going to run out of diesel fuel. You might have enough for a week, maybe a week and a half. But with propane or natural gas, you could put 2,000 or 3,000 or 4,000 gallons in your facility. It depends upon the house, but generally it's up to 2,000 gallons. And that would give you nothing else. That would give you by itself about 9 months of backup power. Now, a wise person would go out in advance and they would buy up batteries and flashlights and candles and canned foods and dried foods and a water filter, and make sure that you have on your generator that you have a line to your well so that you pull water in. But if you're on community water, then you have to have another source of water, because all the water and all the water mains and toilets and sinks, all that stops, because that's all that based upon electrical flow to get it up into your faucets. So if you prepare yourself in advance, there's a high probability you'll be able to survive with minimal hassles, unless it's worse than what we've been told. Here's the problem. On a curve from not a problem at all, nothing to worry about, to really this is bad, it can get really bad, where a whole city can be out of electricity for 1 or 2 years. Let me share the latest on this with you. I'll quote this from, according to NASA, a solar flare is defined as, quote, a sudden, rapid, and intense variation in brightness, unquote, which occurs, quote, when magnetic energy that has been built up in the solar atmosphere is suddenly released, unquote. For centuries, solar flares have caused various calamities on Earth, such as disrupted communications, blackouts, and unusual lights appearing in the sky. In 1859, the most powerful solar flare in recorded history hit Earth and was observed by the English astronomer Richard Carrington. It became known as the Carrington Event, or as the Carrington Superflare. The event occurred during solar cycle 10, the 10th solar cycle since 1755. The powerful solar storm not only created bright lights across the world, those are called auroras, but also interrupted telegraph for weeks. That was back in the mid-19th century. You can imagine, with the modern reliance on satellites, how devastating such a major solar storm would be today. This is the sentiment of many astrologers and experts, including NASA, who believe the potential for another extreme solar event is on the rise. Just a few months ago, NASA filmed the sun roaring out a huge solar flare, which was ranked as a Class M flare, just one position below Class X, the most disruptive type. In the wake of last summer's solar flare, NASA warned that the sun is entering a particularly active period and that similar flares are likely to follow the Class M during 2011. In 2012, the sun is approaching the peak of its 11-year cycle, an activity known as solar maximum, whereby a few natural fireworks are predicted to take place, with solar activity expected to peak around 2013. As we saw last summer, most solar flares only cause minor disruptions with power grids and satellites. However, NASA warns that there's a very good chance that a monster flare like the one of 1859 could hit Earth. In an article published in PCMag.com, Michael Hess, chief of NASA Space Weather Laboratory at the Goddard Space Flight Center, Maryland, wrote about the most dramatic ways that a huge solar flare could affect Earth. Quote, "The worst case scenario is an extreme event. If it were to happen and we don't take any precautions, it would probably knock out our power grid for an extended period of time and destroy a sizable fraction of our satellite infrastructure. This is not something we expect to happen tomorrow, but it's like the impact of a hurricane on a specific location. You don't expect it to happen tomorrow, but you might want to think about what if it were to happen," unquote. In what ways can solar flares affect Earth as we know it? According to naturalnews.com, when solar activity is intense enough to send flares of solar flares or coronal mass ejections into the Earth's atmosphere, it will affect the Earth's electromagnetic field. Speaking to Carl Shriver of Lockheed Martin Solar and Astrophysics Lab in Palo Alto, warned that an increased solar activity may disrupt the electrical grid and electromagnetic communication. This could affect food, water supplies on Earth. He stated that it would therefore be wise as a precaution to stock up on extra food and water in case, quote, "we see solar storms playing out on scales we scarcely imagined before," unquote. And according to some researchers, the potential disruption and damage of huge solar flares could cause penetrates deeper into the Earth's environment than just affecting power grids and communications, as strong solar activity can also unsettle the Earth's tectonic plates and trigger earthquakes. So, our suggestion is, look at Fukushima. No one thought it could happen. Look at all the natural earthquakes, tornadoes, hurricanes. Look at the six separate multi-billion dollar storms in the United States in the last 12 months. No one predicted them, but they happened. I think it's time that we didn't panic, but at the same time, we become prudent and say, if this could happen, shouldn't you be prepared? I'm Gary Noll. Now to our issue of the day, and then we're going to take a break and come back and take your calls. In about 10 minutes now, we're going to go to our guest, Lisa Graves, who'll give us an update on the recently completed this week ALEC, American Legislative Exchange Council, how they managed to influence all the 50 state legislators to vote on what they wanted so they could have even more power over us. This is from Robert Scheer. I'm going to do that next week. I'll do this one. From Robert Reich, The Decline of the Public Good. Now I'll quote this. Meryl Streep's eerie reincarnation of Margaret Thatcher in The Iron Lady brings to mind Thatcher's most famous quip. There is no such thing as society. None of the dwindling herd of Republican candidates has quoted her yet, but they might as well, considering their unremitting bashing of everything public. What defines a society is a set of mutual benefits and duties embodied most visibly in public institutions, public schools, public libraries, public transportation, public hospitals and parks and museums and public recreation and public universities and so on. Public institutions are supported by all taxpayers and are available to all. If the tax system is progressive, those who are better off help pay for everyone else. Privatize means pay for it yourself. The practical consequence of this in an economy whose wealth and income are now more concentrated than any time in 90 years is to make high-quality public goods available to fewer and fewer. Much of what's called public is increasingly a private good paid for by users. Ever higher tolls on public highways and public bridges, higher tuitions at so-called public universities, higher admission fees at public parks and public museums. Much of the rest of what's considered public has become so shoddy that those who can afford to find private alternatives, as public schools deteriorate, the public of the upper middle class and wealthy send their kids to private ones. As public pools and playgrounds decay, they buy memberships in private tennis and swimming clubs. As public hospitals decline, they pay premium rates for private care. Gated communities and office parks now come with their own manicured lawns and walkways, security guards, and backup power systems. Why the decline of public institutions? The financial squeeze on government at all levels since 2008 explains only part of it. The slide really started more than three decades ago with the so-called tax revolts by middle class whose earnings had stopped advancing even though the economy continued to grow. Most families still wanted good public services and institutions but could no longer afford the tab. From that time onward, almost all the gains from growth have gone to the top. But as the upper middle class and the rich began shifting to private institutions, they withdrew political support for public ones. In consequence, their marginal tax rates dropped, setting off a vicious cycle of diminishing revenues and deteriorating quality and spurring more flight from public institutions. Tax revenues from corporations also dropped as big companies went global, keeping their profits offshore and their tax bills to a minimum. But that's not the whole story. America no longer values public goods as we did before. The great expansion of public institutions in America began in the early years of the 20th century when progressive reformers championed the idea that we all benefit from public goods. Excellent schools, good roads, parks, playgrounds, transit systems would knit the new industrial society together, create better citizens, and generate widespread prosperity. Education, for example, was less a personal investment than a public good, improving the entire community and ultimately the nation. In subsequent decades, through the Great Depression and World War II and the Cold War, this logic was expanded upon. Strong public institutions were seen as bulwarks against, in turn, mass poverty, fascism, and then communism. The public good was palpable. We were very much a society bound together by mutual needs and common threats. But in a post-Cold War America, distended by global capital, distorted by concentrated income and wealth, undermined by unlimited campaign donations, and rocked by a wave of new immigrants easily cast by demagogues as them, the notion of the public good has faded. Not even Democrats any longer use the phrase the public good. Public goods are now, at best, the public investments. Public institutions have morphed into public-private partnerships, or for Republicans, simply vouchers. Mitt Romney speaks derisively of what he terms the Democrats' entitlement society in contrast to his opportunity society. At least he still envisions a society. But he hasn't explained how ordinary Americans will be able to take advantage of good opportunities without good public schools, affordable higher education, good roads, and adequate health care. His entitlements are mostly a mirage anyway. Medicare is the only entitlement growing faster than the gross domestic product, but that's because the cost of health care are growing faster than the economy, and any attempt to turn Medicare into a voucher without either raising the voucher in tandem with those costs or somehow taming them will just reduce the elderly's access to health care. Social Security, for its part, hasn't contributed to the budget deficit. It's had surpluses for years. Other safety nets are in tatters. Unemployment insurance reaches just 40% of the jobless these days, largely because eligibility requires having had a steady full-time job for a number of years rather than, as with most people, a string of jobs or part-time jobs. What could Mitt be talking about. Outside of defense, domestic discretionary spending is down sharply as a percent of the economy. Add in declines in state and local spending, and the total public spending on education, infrastructure, and basic research has dropped from 12% of the GDP in the 1970s to 3% this year. Only in one respect is Romney right. America's created a whopping entitlement for the biggest Wall Street banks and their top executives, who, unlike most of the rest of us, are no longer allowed to fail. They can only borrow from the Fed at almost no cost, then lend the money out for 3 to 6% interest. All told, Wall Street's entitlement is the biggest offered by the federal government, even though it doesn't show up in the budget. And it's not even a public good. It's just private gain. We're losing public goods available to all, supported by the tax payments of all, and especially the better off. In its place, we have private goods available to the very rich, supported by the rest of us. Even Lady Thatcher would have been appalled. Your thoughts? 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Back with your calls in a moment. Please stay with us. And then about 5 minutes after that to our guest for Newsmaker Update. Two quick specials for you today. One is that we're happy to say that Death by Medicine is the most winning documentary in the world this year, of over 10,000 documentaries. It's over 60 now. We just got notified of two more today, I was told. And I'm very pleased about that, not because we win awards or put them on a wall. We don't. But because it means people are paying attention. They find something important in this. So I'm offering today the book, the brand new book, Death by Medicine, and the award-winning documentary, Death by Medicine, together both for $15. And all that money goes to this non-commercial radio station. In the film, you will see the truth, the story that is never told by the media, any media, not even the left media, about what doesn't work in medicine and why, by some of the finest minds I could find. And then the book tells you which conditions and which situations you better be careful, because they do not have science on their side to do the treatments and drugs and therapies they're doing. This took 5 years where five of us, MDs and PhDs, researchers and scholars, worked on this methodically using only their facts. This is literally a lifesaver. This is what you want to read before you get any kind of medical test or medical treatment, because you can go to the various chapters on treatments for heart disease and cancers and see what you're going to get and whether or not it works or not. And if it doesn't, how bad is it? And then you'll be able to protect yourself. So everybody needs this book and video. And the book is just, you'll use it 1,000 times. Call this number, $15, that's it. Death by Medicine, the number one documentary in the world this year. And the book that goes with it, both of them, for $15. Normally the film itself would be $40. 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065. I want to make it so inexpensive that even people on very limited income could still afford it. That's why you're not paying $65, you're paying $15 for both the film and the book. 877-627-5065. And finally, the other day I was in an airport And yesterday, from Bangor, Maine, we filmed Dr. Nash and making my way back to New York City, where I'll be back this weekend. And after 80 days on the road, and a person came over and says, "Aren't you that guy on television who talks about health?" I said, "Yes." Said, "I can't take a lot of supplements, but if I could take just one supplement overall, of everything else, it could really make a difference. And I'm concerned about my aging and everything. What would you recommend? Vitamin C or B complex?" I said, "L-carnosine." Then I explained why L-carnosine, in my opinion, is just, it stands alone as one of the single most important, if not the most important nutrient that could make an enormous difference. Now, I don't make claims, so I won't tell you what L-carnosine does, but you could look it up, all the scientific articles, for yourself. Carnosine, C-A-R-N-O-S-I-N-E, carnosine. And that's our very powerful nutrient that we want for today. It's a combination of amino acids, beta-alanine and histidine, and it's a powerful antioxidant, and antioxidants are good, and you want to protect your long-lived cells, like nerve cells, neurons, and muscle cells, myocytes, and they contain high levels of carnosine. And because carnosine is a multifunctioning dipeptide made up of a chemical combination of amino acids, you want to make sure you have adequate amounts in the body. I'm suggesting a good amount would be 500 milligrams a day. So this bottle contains the best possible formula I know of for L-carnosine. So you want L-carnosine? You've got L-carnosine. You buy one, you get one free. All natural ingredients. Buy one L-carnosine, and you get one bottle free. Again, call the same number. And that number again is, and this is for everyone anywhere in North America, 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. And buy one L-carnosine, the superstar of superstars, and get one bottle absolutely free. Now let's go into our studio before we go to our guest and a couple of your calls. And let's say hello to Jason. Hi, Jason.
Hi, good afternoon, Gary. I just had two quick announcements I want to share with the listeners. Tonight, on Public Access Television on Woodstock in New York, you can listen to Gary Null see two movies from 9 to 12 p.m. this evening. At 9 o'clock, it'll be Vaccine Nation, and at 10:30, we'll have Prescriptions for Disaster. So anyone in the upstate New York region who can get Channel 23 in Woodstock, please listen. It's a free movie. It's two great Gary Null movies. And then we have these two great events coming into New York, and this is all about hydrofracking. The deadline for your public comments to end hydrofracking coming to New York is January 11th. So in Long Island this week, there'll be two events. So on Sunday, January 8th at the Levittown Public Library at 1 Bluegrass Lane, please join them from 1 to 4 to protest hydrofracking. And also on Monday, January 9th at the Plainview Old Bethpage Public Library, which is 999 Old Country Road, please join them at 7 p.m. And if you need any other information, just go to foodandwaterwatch.org, or you can email them at don'tfrackny@aol.com.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you very much, Gary.
Let's go over to our guest who's standing by. I gave you her background earlier in the program. Lisa Graves is the executive director of Center for Media and Democracy and the publisher of PR Watch, Source Watch, and Bankster USA. She previously served as a senior advisor in all three branches of the federal government, and she has been a leading strategist on civil liberties advocacy and is an adjunct law professor at one of the top law schools in the country. And she's here to talk about how ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, is able to influence with PAC money and lobbying so many of the laws in our states. Nice to have you with us today, Lisa.
Happy to be here.
Let's go through why we should be concerned about ALEC and why ALEC's new initiatives are so important to all of us.
Well, the American Legislative Exchange Council is a group that was founded a couple of decades ago, but it really has reached its zenith in the past 2 years with a number of state legislatures controlled by leaders of ALEC as well as a number of governors who are alumni of ALEC. And ALEC describes itself as one of the largest, in fact, the largest group of state legislators in the country. In fact, 99% of the operational costs of ALEC, its budget is between $6 and $7 million a year. 99% of its budget is paid for by corporations, by corporate foundations, by CEO-funded foundations, and everything but legislative dues, which are only $50 a year. And so this is really a group that's largely funded by corporations and by foundations from the right, the far right. And what it does is it gets politicians and corporate lobbyists in a room behind closed doors, and they vote to approve so-called model legislation. That legislation then is introduced in state houses across the country, cleansed of any reference to the fact that it was previously voted on by corporate representatives sitting alongside politicians, and often it's been rammed through the legislatures, as we saw in Wisconsin last year. Key ALEC provisions were pushed through the legislatures, and we also seen some of these ALEC ideas, these ALEC bills popping up in the federal legislature in the House of Representatives, which is led by two ALEC alums, John Boehner and Eric Cantor. So ALEC has an extraordinary influence, and we have a whole website dedicated to exposing them. It's called alecexposed.org. That's A-L-E-C. Exposed.org, and we think it's important for Americans to understand how much corporations are doing to influence and rewrite our laws across the country. Now, ALEC says that it doesn't lobby. That's been disputed by Common Cause, which has filed a request for investigation with the IRS. ALEC doesn't have a PAC, but ALEC has legislators across the country who, under their bylaws, have a duty to get ALEC bills introduced in the state houses, and that's exactly what they're doing in state houses across the nation.
How could the average person not be concerned when you have a group representing major corporations, and they're sitting with their elected state representatives, and they're coaching them on why a particular bill should be passed or one that is in existence should be taken away or watered down? And the public will never know this. And how this came to be was 3 years ago, there was an effort in New York State to pass mandatory vaccinations for all healthcare workers. They wanted to have four shots, two flu shots and two H1N1 shots. We only had about 2 to 3 days once we heard this and that it was going to be the law before we swung into action. The very first thing I did was when I was contacting some legislatures in New York, I said, where's your science on this? You know, who says this is the way it should be? What proof is there that if they got these four vaccines that somehow they would be protected or they would protect patients? There was no science at all behind it. So because we had been working diligently in this field, we prepared 110 pages of scientific references showing that not only would they not be protected if they took these four, but they would be receiving 100 micrograms, 25 micrograms per vaccine of mercury, ethyl mercury, and which is extremely dangerous in the form of thimerosal. And these are all neurotoxics, and this could have devastating effect. Plus, there was no actual studies to show that this was science-based medicine. So we held demonstrations in the Capitol, and we gave a documentary that we just had finished called Vaccine Nation, showing the lack of science from scientists working in the field. We stopped them. Only after we stopped them, and only after I met with the three scientists who were, three doctors who were kind of the top medical doctors in the state who represented the state's interest, and I kept saying, why are you pushing this through? Is there someone behind this? How in the world could you suddenly come up with this idea? Who came up with this idea? What's their science? You know, you're asking someone to do something, to put an ingredient in their body, and doctors don't want to do this. Nurses don't want to do this. Show us the science. They had no science to show us. Who was responsible? They wouldn't tell us who was responsible. Well, don't tell me you're going to pass a law and no one sponsored it. And now we found out it was ALEC. All right? And then they did in all 50 states. And then they went Gardasil in all 50 states. And why? The manufacturer of Gardasil is one of the members of ALEC. The pharmaceutical company are heavily represented on ALEC. So now when the state tells you you must do something or no longer are you going to be required to do something, we never know who's behind that. And to me, that shows that we do not have true representative government. Your thoughts on this, please.
Sure, Gary. I'm actually not familiar with ALEC's bill on vaccination of healthcare workers or Gardasil, but I would say that it's precisely correct that ALEC members include major global pharmaceutical firms, and they have an array of efforts that they push both through ALEC as well as in their lobbying directly to state legislators and to members of Congress. We see that they spread their money around to both Republicans and Democrats, and they work to influence politicians across the country to adopt policies that basically increase their profits, always under the guise of health, of improving health or health access. But as we've seen in a number of instances, and as our fellow Wendell Potter has documented, the big pharmaceutical companies, as well as some of the big health insurance companies, their agenda really is not the same as what's best for the American people in many instances. And in fact, often the policies that they're pushing, whether it's tort reform, meaning changing the rules for you if you're injured or killed as a result of one of their products, are really designed to advantage the company over the person. One of the things we've seen, in fact, is an effort across the country that many of your listeners may have heard about, which is an effort to basically say that if a government agency like the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, approves a drug or approves a product, that you can't sue them. If your loved one is killed or injured, unless you can show some specific misconduct. Meanwhile, we know that the FDA is underfunded and basically relies often on the studies produced by the pharmaceutical companies and medical device companies showing that their products are safe. And so just the idea that a mere approval by a government agency would absolve them of any liability if your loved one or you is seriously injured by one of these drugs or products is just shocking. But that's part of the agenda that we've seen being moved through these ALEC model bills, these ALEC model bills in the area of tort reform that we've documented on our site. I think that I think sometimes people say, well, how is this different than ordinary lobbying? And it is, in fact, the case that the pharmaceutical companies have tremendous influence in Congress and in the White House and of any party and in the state houses. But what's different with ALEC is that these lobbyists are actually sitting behind closed doors for some of these companies, sitting alongside politicians, secretly, basically voting for these bills as equals to our elected representatives. And then those elected representatives walk out of that room in some instances and introduce those bills without telling you that they already pre-voted on them with these corporations. It's really shocking.
In any kind of ethical society, this would not be tolerated. I'm not concerned with the corporations. I understand their mindset. They're interested in maximizing their profitability for themselves and their shareholders. I understand the politicians. I respect very few politicians because I don't respect how a politician becomes a politician today. I don't respect the amount of money or any money that's used to generate the acceptance of a politician. So let's set those two aside for a moment. If we put all of our concern on them, we're not looking at the real problem. I consider that the biggest problem in America today is the American public's indifference to the hundreds of major crises that are happening that they're refusing to address on any level. Under 0.1% of the people participating in Occupy Wall Street as a percentage of the population, that's 99.9% of the population are doing nothing. No major advances against wars, against the bailouts by the Federal Reserve, against lack of transparency, against no major outpouring of contempt in the mainstream media on CNN at all, against the Defense Authorization Act and the power that gives not only this president but future presidents. None of these things that are happening to us, the degradation of our environment, the denial of global warming, The amount of poverty, the amount of hungry children, the privatization, the pushing for more private prison systems so that they can then continue the war on drugs, which gives them a lot more people that they're making a profit on by putting in a cell. And the average American is far more attuned to Dancing with the Stars or the latest Apprentice reject than they are with anything germane to their future. There's the problem, and no one's talking about the public. Your thoughts?
Well, I think it is. It's very sad what we've been seeing, which is the fact is that most Americans seem to, at least by the Nielsen studies, basically, seem to be very interested in what's happening with pop culture. In many instances, more interested in pop culture, even if culture is actually the word that should be ascribed to that, celebrities and such, as opposed to what's actually happening in their environment, in their government, in our democracy. And that sort of apathy is certainly disturbing. And it allows these sorts of things to happen. It allows groups that are focused on our government, are focused on manipulating our government, are focused on manipulating the rules about our environment, for example, to have tremendous influence while no one is really looking. Although I would say that there are a lot of people looking, and despite the fact that as you point out, the majority of Americans aren't out in the streets, in essence, protesting, I actually think that the fact that so many people have come out across the country for these protests against Wall Street and against these Wall Street-driven policies of our government is a major breakthrough. Even though it's not enough, and even though it doesn't represent enough of a percentage of the population, I actually think that there's a lot that has come out of people being willing to stand up. And so I'm more hopeful in some ways than I have been before. At the same time, I think that there are a number of people who maybe they don't protest, they're not out protesting on a regular basis, but they're very deeply concerned about what's been happening to our country and the extraordinary influence of corporations, both before and after the Supreme Court's devastating decision called Citizens United that unleashed corporations and billionaire CEOs and others to spend unlimited money influencing our elections. I think we have a growing awareness in this country that the corporate control of our democracy, the corporate influence that's distorting our laws, is wrong, that our democracy, in fact, is broken in many respects. And so I think we have more people than ever that are waking up to this situation and calling for something to be done, but we by no means have enough people yet who are awakened and are calling for action.
I would add this thought, and I thank you. I appreciate, Lisa, those thoughts. I would say that we have different types of awakening today. I believe that we have the type of awakening where you and the people who support the Center for Media and Democracy and PR Watch and Source Watch and Bankster USA are much more concerned, tend to do a lot more research and really engage in the discussion. And then I believe we have an enormous amount of faux followers, people who say, yeah, I'm into health. You know, you stand outside of a Whole Foods supermarket that last year was caught buying its so-called 365 organic produce from where? Well, they were buying it from they were buying it from China. And yet you go into the supermarket, the largest department's alcohol, and then you look at all the stuff in their shopping cart, and you don't find most of it's healthy, only a tiny percentage, and it's not really supporting local small farmers. Just one example. Recently, in my major travels around the United States, I had an opportunity to meet with a group of people to talk about globalization and what they could do. They all supported Occupy Wall Street. They all supported all the Occupy movements. So I said, all right, are you going to be a faux supporter or a real actual supporter? And they said, oh, actual. I said, then why are you choosing to meet in a Starbucks? Why are you choosing to sit here and eat the very foods that are causing the diabetes that are made and profited by these mega corporations? You're wearing their clothes. You're wearing clothes made in Bangladesh. You're wearing shoes made in China. You're driving an oversized car. What part of this discussion is let's just talk about it versus let's do it? Are you taking your money out of their banks? Are you ripping up their credit cards? Are you putting your money into credit unions? Are you supporting local farmers markets? Are you out there showing solidarity? Are you disengaging off the grid of corporate control? Are you going to stop before you vote Democrat or Republican and look for the best person, even if that person's not on the ballot, like an Anderson who's out there? What's his first name? Rocky Anderson? Who really represents a legitimate alternative, but he's not anywhere to be found, nor about four other people around, because they would embarrass these people by their honesty and their how they're approaching it. So what I find is that there's only maybe 2 or 3% of the activists in this country who are really committed by what they do, the life they live, where they put their money, their energy, and their resources to authentic change, and a whole lot of people are faux change. Final comment from you.
Sure. Well, I think that there are there's a substantial number of people, unfortunately, who have never thought about where their food comes from. Who don't know, in essence, they lead a pretty consumer-based society. They have more loyalty to a particular corporate product brand, let's say it's Coca-Cola, for example, than to having any understanding of what Coca-Cola does, where it produces, what its health or safety record is, that sort of thing. And I think that there's a lack of knowledge and a lack of awareness, a lack of maybe skepticism about some of these corporations and knowing what they're doing. On the other hand, there's a lack of information. You can barely find information about in many instances where your food is grown or manufactured. The candy bar companies in this country often, you can see now on their packages that they say distributed by an American company, but you have no idea whether that product was made in China. Now, candy bars aren't the optimal example. I just noticed it, you know, coming into Halloween, how many of the companies, say that they're distributed by a U.S. company, not telling you where their products are made. The fact is that it's actually hard, I think, for some consumers to figure out, some citizens who really even actually probably shouldn't be called consumers or shouldn't identify as consumers, to find out choices to make. But I do think that people are increasingly making those choices. There's a growing movement on local food as opposed to corporate food or food grown abroad out of season and shipped across the country. There's a growing number of people who are trying to find energy efficient cars, or who are using older cars rather than getting a car shipped in from overseas. There are a growing number of people who are pushing for local shopping to local businesses. These movements are sort of in some ways just beginning. And I'm not sure that there certainly are some faux protesters or something, but I prefer to think of them less as intentionally doing something and being hypocrites than people who are just beginning perhaps their process.
Okay, let's give them a benefit of a doubt, and we've got a year ahead of us, and let's try to see that what we do is authentic and we can do it daily in our own lives. And I thank you very much. We're out of time, Lisa, for all the good work that you and your different organizations are doing. And let us keep reminding ourselves, do not trust anything your state legislator is supposedly doing on your behalf till you do your homework and ask them directly. Have you met with now or in the past anyone from the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC? Did this come to your attention because of them? In which case, then you should say, shame on you for thinking I am too dumb not to figure some of this out for myself. And let's make them aware we will not vote them back into office. All the best to you, Lisa.
Thanks, Gary, and thanks for your call for authenticity. I really appreciate it.
Website, prwatch.org, prwatch.org, Lisa Graves. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all very much for listening. Look forward to sharing more on our next program. Stay tuned for Danny Schechter right here on the number one listened to program in the world for Progressive Minds, the Progressive Radio Network, and over 180,000 new people just in the last couple weeks.